Welcome back. I'll now continue teaching on the Baptists in Virginia, their activities and persecutions, and their impact prior to, during, and after the Revolutionary War. Just before the break, I was talking about Colonel Samuel Harris. He was a fearless preacher. The excellence of his preaching lay chiefly in addressing the heart, and one historian holds that perhaps even Whitfield did not surpass him in this. He had the assistance of several North Carolina itinerant evangelists planting the earliest separate churches in South Central Virginia. The Dan River Church was started in 1760 by Daniel Marshall and Philip Mulkey with 74 charter members, 11 of whom were Negroes. Other churches were soon constituted from the Dan River Church. Wherever the Baptist itinerants preached, great crowds came to hear them. Many were converted in Virginia, and many Baptist churches were started. In 1770, there were only two separate churches north of the James River, fourth south of it. The General Association of Separate Baptists of Virginia was held in May 1771 in Orange County, with 12 churches represented and 3 not represented. By 1772, the separate churches outnumbered those of the regular churches. In that year, as many as 40,000 Virginians may have heard the gospel. By 1773, 34 churches were represented at the General Association meeting, and they reported a combined membership of 3,195. By May 1774, when Baptist expansion and Baptist persecution were at high tide, the Southern District in Virginia had 27 churches with 2,033 members, and the Northern District had 24 churches with 1,921 members. By the end of 1774, there was at least one separate Baptist church in 28 of the 60 counties of Virginia. During the Revolution, Baptist growth continued, but at a much slower pace. From 1768 through 1774, the Baptists were persecuted severely. Baptist preachers were whipped, arrested, fined, imprisoned on bread and water, although the authorities sanctimoniously denied that punishment was for preaching. The crime, they said, was for breach of peace. The first instance of actual imprisonment was on June 4, 1768, when John Waller, Lewis Craig, James Childs, James Reed, and William Morris were arrested at Craig's meeting house in Spotsylvania and charged with disturbing the peace. The magistrates offered to release them if they would promise to preach no more for a year and a day. They refused and were jailed. Many more were jailed and otherwise persecuted until 1774. In God Betrayed, I list several books that you can go to, and those books list many Baptists and the persecutions they endured in Virginia. Persecutions such as being jailed for preaching, civil suit, being annoyed by men drinking and playing cards, being jerked off stage and head beaten against the ground, hands being slashed, beaten with bludgeons, being shot with a shotgun, ousted as a justice for preaching, being brutally beaten by a mob, severely beaten with a stick, and so forth. The persecutors seem sometimes to strive to treat the Baptist and their worship with as much rudeness and indecency as was possible. They often insulted the preacher in time of service and would ride into the water and make sport when they administered baptism. They frequently fabricated and spread the most groundless reports, which were injurious to the characters of the Baptist. When any Baptist fell into any improper conduct, it was always exaggerated to the utmost extent. The enemy, not contented with ridicule and defamation, manifested their abhorrence to the Baptist in another way. By law then in force in Virginia, all were under obligation to go to church several times a year. The failure subjected them to fine. Little action against members of the established church was taken under this law, but as soon as the new lights were absent, they were presented by grand jury and fined. Others were imprisoned for preaching without a license. When persecutors found religion could not be stopped by ridicule, defamation, and abusive language, the resolution was to take a different step and see what they could do. And the preachers in different places were apprehended by magisterial authority, some of whom were imprisoned and some escaped. Before this step was taken, the parson of the parish was consulted, and he advised that the new lights ought to be taken up and imprisoned as necessary for the peace and harmony of the old church. An Episcopalian wrote, "No dissenters in Virginia experienced for a time harsher treatment than did the Baptist. They were beaten and imprisoned and cruelly taxed, its ingenuity to devise new modes of punishment and annoyance. As a result of the persecutions and oppressions, Baptists began to petition the House of Burgesses for relief. Their first petition in 1770, requesting that Baptist ministers not be compelled to bear arms or attend musters, was rejected. Other petitions from Baptists in several counties were submitted in 1772, requesting that they be treated with the same indulgence in religious matters as Quakers, Presbyterians, and other Protestant dissenters enjoy. The petitions continued until 1775. The Presbyterians petitioned also, but for the right to incorporate so that they could receive and hold gifts of land and slaves for the support of their ministers. One of the Presbyterian petitions was improperly hailed as proof that the Presbyterians anticipated the Baptists in their memorials asking for religious liberty. An examination of that petition reveals that it contemplated nothing more than securing for Presbyterians and others in Virginia the same privileges and liberties which they enjoyed in England under the Act of Toleration, and contained no attack upon the establishment or any sign of hostility to it. Again, please remember that James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and others were watching these persecutions of the Baptists. James Madison wrote to his old college friend Bradford of Philadelphia in a letter dated January 24, 1774. Listen to what he expressed in that letter. He expressed his belief that if uninterrupted harmony had prevailed throughout the continent in matters of established religion as practiced in Virginia, "It is clear to me," Madison said, "that slavery and subjection might and would have been gradually insinuated among us." He continued, "Union of religious sentiments begets a surprising confidence, and ecclesiastical establishments tend to great ignorance and corruption, all of which facilitates the execution of mischievous projects." Madison continued, "Poverty and luxury prevail among all sorts, pride, ignorance, and knavery among the priesthood, and vice and wickedness among the laity. This is bad enough, but it is not the worst I have to tell you. That diabolical, hell-conceived principle of persecution rages among some, and to their eternal infamy. The clergy can furnish their quota of imps for such purposes. There are at this time in the adjacent county not less than 5 or 6 well-meaning men in close jail for publishing their religious sentiments, which in the main are very orthodox. I have neither patience to hear, talk, or think of anything relative to this matter, for I have squabbled and scolded, abused and ridiculed so long about it to little purpose that I am without common patience. So I must beg you to pity me and pray for liberty of conscience to all." In another letter to Bradford, dated April 1, 1774, Madison wrote that he doubted that anything would be done to help the dissenters in the assembly meeting beginning May 1, 1774. Madison wrote of the incredible and extravagant stories which are told in the House of the monstrous effects of the enthusiasm prevalent among the sectaries and so greedily swallowed by their enemies. And Madison said, "And the bad name they will still have with those who pretend too much contempt to examine into their principles and conduct, and are too much devoted to ecclesiastical establishment to hear of the toleration of the dissidents. The liberal, Catholic, and equitable way of thinking as to the rights of conscience, which is one of the characteristics of a free people, and so strongly marks the people of your province, is little known among the zealous adherents to our hierarchy." Madison continued, "Although we have some persons of generous principles in the legislature, the clergy are a numerous and powerful body, have great influence at home by reason of their connection with the dependents on bishops and crown, and will naturally employ all their acts and interests to depress their rising adversaries, for such they must consider dissidents, who rob them of the goodwill of the people, and may in time endanger their livings and security." Madison continued in that letter, "Religious bondage shackles and debilitates the mind, and unfits it for every enterprise, every expanded prospect." And I close quoting from Madison at this point. 1775 closed the period of intolerance, toleration, and persecution. I quote from James, "The colony is involved in trouble with the mother country. Virginia has denounced the Boston Port Bill and made common cause with Massachusetts. The First Continental Congress has already met in Philadelphia. Patrick Henry has electrified the country by his memorable speech in the popular convention, which met March 1775. The battles of Lexington and Concord have been fought on April 19th, and Virginia has taken steps to enroll companies of volunteers in every county. The war of the revolution is on, and the times call for union and harmony among all classes. Hence, there is no more persecution of Baptists. There are no more imprisonments in 1775, and that obnoxious toleration bill is indefinitely postponed. The same ruling class that admitted the Presbyterians to Virginia and to the benefits of the Act of Toleration on condition that they occupied the frontier counties and thus protected them against Indian raids are now inclined to tolerate not only the Presbyterians but the Baptists also, with all their pernicious doctrines, if only they will help in the struggle with Great Britain. The Baptists will help, and not a Tory will be found among them. But they will strike for something more and something dearer to them than civil liberty, for freedom of conscience, for just and true liberty, equal and impartial liberty." Close quote. The Baptists were ready to push for religious freedom and abolition of the establishment. In their association meeting on the fourth Saturday of May 1775, they were to a man favorable to any revolution by which they could obtain freedom of religion. They had known from experience that mere toleration was not a sufficient check, having been imprisoned at a time when that law was considered by many as being in force. They decided to circulate petitions throughout the state calling for abolition of the church establishment and freedom of religion, and also to appoint commissioners to present their address for military resistance to British oppression, and offering the services of their young men as soldiers, and asking only that, so far as the army was concerned, their ministers might enjoy like privileges with the clergy of the established church to the state convention, which was the House of Burgess under a new name and in a different character. The convention, still controlled by the same class that had, a few years before, made concessions to the Presbyterians on condition that they settle on the western counties forming a line of defense against the Indians, resolved to allow those dissenters in the military who so desired to attend divine worship administered by dissenting preachers. This first step towards placing all Virginia clergy on an equal footing came as a result of the need for the numerical strength of the Baptists in what was considered by the establishment in 1775 a struggle for their rights in the Union with England. The convention maintained their faith and true allegiance to His Majesty George III, their only lawful and rightful king. It would have been very impolitic, even if their petitions had been ready, to have sprung the question of disestablishment upon the convention before they had committed themselves to the cause of independence. Virginia adopted a new constitution in 1776. The convention of 1776 was, by its act, made the House of Delegates of the First General Assembly under the new constitution. There were 29 new members in this meeting that were not in the 1775 convention. When there was anything near a division among the other inhabitants in a county, the Baptists, together with their influence, gave a cast to the scale, by which means many a worthy and useful member was lodged in the House of Assembly and answered a valuable purpose there. Among those favorable to Baptist causes was James Madison. On May 12th, the Congress met in Philadelphia and instructed the colonies to organize independent governments of their own. The war was on. On May 15th, the convention resolved to declare the colonies free and independent states, and that a committee be appointed to prepare a Declaration of Rights and a plan of government which would maintain peace and order and secure substantial and equal liberty to the people. If you've been following these studies all along, you're beginning to see how this development of the principle of separation of church and state is all coming together. Remember, I started with the biblical principles of government, church, and separation of church and state. Now I'm into the application of those principles in America. We're now studying the history of the First Amendment in America. We're now in Virginia during the Revolutionary War. We're getting close to the ratification of the Constitution and the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. All these broadcasts are being archived on churchandstatelaw.com. I'll be back next week, same time, same place, and continue these studies.